I'm not saying immature in a bad way. I mean it in like the literal sense. Like it's not mature compared to Andor. Tone and delivery that Rebels, even Clone Wars, has, despite the fact that every now and then some clone gets his head chopped off or Darth Maul stabs someone. Ooh, super dark. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Star Wars review here on the Genreverse YouTube channel. It is the Cantina, and we are here to review the greatest Star Wars since The Empire Strikes Back, Andor Season 2, Episodes 10, 11, and 12. I'm Kyle, joined by the full crew, the full staff of the Cantina. Shockey, Mike over there on my left, screen left, something like that, and then Cam on the other side. Excuse me. Make sure you guys are subscribed to the channel if you haven't already. And if you have, thank you very much. I know it's a lot of anime content, but we do cover other things in geek, pop culture, entertainment, obviously. And you can check out all sorts of old previous reviews. Our playlist tab is filled with them. More Star Wars shows. Everything like Acolyte back, not Skeleton Crew, because that was after, but yeah, we've reviewed pretty much everything live action, so you guys can find it there. If you are one of our fellow weebs as well, and you didn't know we do have, or you're into anime and you just didn't know we did that here because you found us for Andor, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/animeversal. Go check that out. What we talk about here on the Genreverse, we like to write about over at lrmonline.com, including Cam's written reviews, all sorts of celebrity interviews on the LRM YouTube channel, news aggregation, leaks, rumors, like press releases type stuff. So yeah, definitely check it out. And there's Cam's write-up. I'm excited, but we're going to try to move through this quickly because Mike's got some things to do as well. So Shock, you missed out last week. We'll start with you. Give us another taste of what you thought about previous week's episodes and then your thoughts on this finale.
Yeah. So episode 7, 8, 9, like the season kept on building up, getting better and better. And so, you know, it was a great setup for how Mon Mothma, you know, finally exposes herself as kind of the, not necessarily the leader of the rebellion, but kind of more or less the voice of the rebellion. Mm-hmm. Straight off of that, the tense, build up to that, we finally got to see what Gorman was all about and the kind of the massacre there, and you know, you see the kind of the Empire trying to hide what was going on, but the, you know, the rebellion getting, you know, leaks out of information in there. So it was kind of the first real crumble we see of the Empire, you know, to lead to what we, you know, of course ends up being, you know, the rebellion versus the Empire from there. So overall, loved it, enjoyed it. The way that Cassian intercepts Mon Mothma and the escape route, you know, through there, loved that scene. I just, you know, this series is, like you said, it's peak Star Wars, probably the best since Empire Strikes Back from there. And we'll, you know, talk about kind of the finale here, but overall great. Did you guys talk about how, like, the way that the episode 9, the way it ends with Mon Mothma, it leads into that episode of Rebels where they pick her up and everything.
And we talked about how happy we were that none of the Rebels crew showed up.
Yeah, it was a good choice. I'm happy with that. But it, you know, it's like a lot of people I saw online went and watched that episode right after. Tonal wise, it's totally different because it's, of course, a kid's show and everything. But
I saw people just kinda talking about the that.
The speech is better in the live action show.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah.
They decided, you know, that they were going to do it a little bit different. And I think they were right to do so.
I saw a few people that were coming to grasp with how cartoony and how, I'm not saying immature in a bad way. I mean it in like the literal sense. Like it's not mature compared to Andor. Tone and delivery that Rebels, even Clone Wars, has, despite the fact that every now and then some clone gets his head chopped off or Darth Maul stabs someone. Ooh, super dark.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it's definitely two different tones to their to her speeches and stuff. But it was kind of just like how we're going to talk about in the finale of this season, how it rolls right into to Rogue One. It was. I appreciate at least that they took the time and effort to really think about, okay, Mon Mothma's not going to somewhere else. There's a already canon storyline mm-hmm. with her making her her voyage to Yavin and kind of building up the rebellion from there. So appreciated that. That's all. So, but nice. Yeah, overall, great.
So what'd you think about this week's episodes, man? The finale.
Listen, I didn't think you could get better than 7, 8, 9, and I was wrong. I loved how this story wrapped up every character. There was not one single piece of this story, the arc of, you know, the characters from, you know, from Andor that ended in a way I was like, I don't like that, or I wouldn't have gone that choice. I mean, just. Even the part where, like, Deidre, you know, is goes to the prison that we got in season one and ends up right there. So I think it's ultimately, you know, the best Star Wars. Well, Tony Gilroy and the crew that he assembled to put this together, if he wanted to do another Star Wars project, that given to him, you know. And but I think that's where the future. It'll never happen again. It will never. Tony's said he doesn't want. He wants. He's moved on, and I get it and stuff. But what I really appreciate about this is that it did not the fact that they did not use a single Jedi, a single idea of the Force or anything.
I mean, they had the really, Force healer.
Force ish. Yeah. Okay. You know, and stuff. But it really was.
Yeah.
They hinted, right? But this is really what Star Wars was really about. Because if you think about A New Hope, right? It wasn't great. You know, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Vader fighting, that was cool and everything like that. But what really got us into Star Wars and, you know, with the first film and even Empire Strikes Back was not necessarily the lore of the Jedi or the lore of the Sith. It was good versus evil, the rebellion versus the Empire.
Space, you know, battles.
Space battles, right? Yeah. Like, the Battle of Hoth is, to me, you know, like, ingrained in my brain. And I love that. Anytime there's an opportunity to play in a video game, I will do that. And, you know, flying an X-Wing and all these things. It just, and this was more of, you know, spies and, you know, and secrecy and building up the battle to go up against the Empire, which I really appreciated. But there's not one time did they try to, like, say, okay, let's throw the Jedi in here. Let's throw, you know, some sort
just of just because.
Of, yeah, just because, you know, we have to have a Jedi, and that'll be the saving grace. I think that was a, you know, a handicap for Skeleton Crew. Like, I think Skeleton Crew, if you go watch it, you know, again, and so, like, if Jude Law's character didn't have the Force and you take out the Jedi persona, man, I think it's a good campy, you know, show, you know, it's not like serious tone or anything like that, but I think that's the biggest mistake so many of these new directors and new Star Wars creators, they feel like they have to use the Force and they have to use the Jedi and they it's their interpretation of it, you know, and the Acolyte, that was everything that was wrong with it. It was, you know, their interpretation of what the Jedi were and what the Sith were, you know. It's just Star Wars in general is a very simple concept. It's, you know, good, evil, you know, parts of it. And last thing is Luthen's character, to me, it was like it made it, you know, whole. Like, from that was the character, you know, I fell in love with this season the most. I liked Luthen in season one, but seeing him, you know, really give up his life for the rebellion and go out the way he did, it was perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Cam, your thoughts? Finale, man.
Yeah, I thought it was absolutely brilliant as well. I think I would echo what you said about everybody's arcs. You know, unless their arc continues into Rogue One, then they all had satisfying arcs or conclusions to their arcs, shall we say, that fit each character very well, I thought. The little bit of backstory on Claire, I think, let us understand their relationship a little more, just enough so that we could kind of follow her once Luthen wasn't there, and we could see from her point of view that whole assassination scene, which was just awesome. That reminded me of something out of The Godfather with that building they found with the windows at either side, just so well the way it all, you know, and they shot it. It was just so good. But it felt like, you know, those tense parts of The Godfather where they're like, there's somebody trying to get to somebody to kill them off, and, you know, that sort of stuff. It was just so well done. But of course, like, with the emotion attached to it, because, you know, we know what Luthen actually does mean to Claire in the first place, or whatever her actual name is. That was the one that he gave her at some point. You know, and I think the best thing about Andor, you can really say, is that it improves Rogue One and it improves A New Hope as well.
Because
A New Hope is the lighter touch. It's the suddenly our heroes, you know, fight back kind of thing. But, you know, we, Andor and Rogue One is what allows us to appreciate how on the brink things actually were for the rebellion, and how tight things actually became, and how much of a just a massive loss that the Empire takes over the course of kind of a year.
From that
final episode of Andor, what happens in Scarif and Rogue One, and then not long after that, the Death Star goes bye-bye, and, you know, the Emperor's lost the Senate at this point, you know, everything just starts to go downhill from this point. And, you know, as much as we can say, you know, the Rebellion would never have won without Luke Skywalker, you know, all of this that's set in motion before Luke Skywalker's even been picked up off of Tatooine, you know, or Han Solo's still just running about smuggling, you know, so Leia maybe, is involved, but, you know, and that's the beauty of this show. It shows us that this rebellion is a whole load of people who all did amazing things and very brave things, and sometimes morally grey things as well, in order to beat this force, you know. Absolutely fantastic.
What was your favorite of the three final episodes?
So, like, which one out of this
of those three? Yeah, which of the three episodes in part four were you?
Well, I think it has to be the second one then for me, the one with the actual assassination, I think, itself, rather than the escape. As much as there were moments from them all, though, I mean, I loved Luthen and Daedra's confrontation was absolutely wonderful, because, you know, you can see by Stellan Skarsgård's, you know, facial expressions that the penny has dropped for him almost immediately. Like, you know, he's lost. The smile goes at a certain point, you know, and Daedra's still playing him on, but he knows. Yeah, he knows what's happening here, you know. He basically, as soon as he sees it's her that's come in for him, he understands what's going on. And it's kind of the way he almost plays her then after that as well. Of course, the ramifications that then has to everybody, you know, he can't give up the Yavin base, you know, and what happens to Daedra beyond that. So and then if we go into the final episode, there was some absolutely great stuff as well, because I loved the K2 and
so
Cassian sort of double act was just phenomenal. And, you know, it was like, we've been waiting on that. And they saved it for the end, and then it makes that and Rogue One better, because it's just that little short space of time we've got it. So they were all fantastic, but I think if I had to choose one, it would be that middle one for me.
What about you, Mike?
Yeah, I'm the same, because we got the backstory about Luthen and how he was, what was he, not a commander,
like a trooper
and they're massacring and you can hear over the radio they're massacring a village or a town, and they just keep going after it and going after it, and he's like, make it stop, you could tell that he didn't want anything to be a part of it and stuff, and we get that side of him. And then, you know, getting, you know, Clara to kind of get on board, and then the what was it, Naboo that they were on, and
that it was Naboo?
It looked like it.
That was definitely Naboo, because if you think he says to it at one point, think about where we are now from their point of view. They're not thinking Amidala or that. They're thinking where's Emperor Palpatine from? He's from Naboo. This is his own place.
Yeah.
You know, so Definitely Nabu. Yeah.
But yeah, that scene right there, you know, and how telling her, you know, that you have a choice to make, you know, you're in or you're out and stuff, and setting off the bomb, and just the way that it all works itself out. And you get that backstory about him. You get the unbelievable hospital scene of the, you know, to that she, you know, gets the Claire gets the Luthen, you know, and then the goodbye to, you know, the, you know, silent goodbye, but you could tell there, even without saying anything, there was a lot of heart into that scene right there. It's that was really well done. And then, you know, the last episode kind of was to make that point of how big the rebellion really was. And to your, like, to Cam's point, you know, could the rebellion have continue on even without Luke Skywalker, you know, type deal?
I loved this all. I thought it was phenomenal. I was, you know, last week Cam said greatest since Empire Strikes Back, and I said maybe greatest since Return of the Jedi, which to me is better than Episode 4 even. I still stand by some of the best writing was in Jedi, still is in Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
But this was just like, and there's even ways that this is written better and done better in some ways than aspects of Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, for sure.
But they're also two different things. So take that for what you will. I loved the second episode. I loved episode 11. I love all three of them, but episode 11, I like K2 so much. It was such a freaking treat to finally have him back. I loved him in Rogue One, and watched Rogue One the same day that we finished watching this, which was Wednesday. I think I watched all three of them on Wednesday. And I had a blast. I was glued to it. As well as I can be to anything these days with my home life. Our son is a trip. I found myself like suggesting, like telling Christine, like, you need to watch. She watched season one. She's just like us with most Star Wars and Marvel, burned out, you know, tired of being hit with slop, and just was like, eh. But Brian, who does some of the anime content with us, he liked season one, but he felt it just didn't matter enough. And like, yeah, sure, you're getting good stories, but like, it didn't hit him the way it did us, right?
Yeah.
Season one. But I was like, dude, you've got to see this. Like, I'm telling you, this is the greatest thing since sliced freaking bread. I'm both overjoyed that we got this and horrified that we got this, because nothing will ever compare to this, because we will never get anything this serious in tone again, outside of things like maybe Visions, or I've you know, dreamed of them doing some animated like movie adaptations of EU stories. I think those could be cool, but I don't foresee Star Wars ever giving us another EU like story in tone and feel again.
I don't know. I think they could give us mature content again, but where I would agree with you is I don't think we would get it with as high budget values.
Oh, for
sure. We talked about this a bit last week, and I think that'll be saved for movies alone.
Yeah.
And I don't think we'll get a story this mature in a movie. So, you know, I kind of agree with you, but I think there is the potential there, but we'd have to lower our expectations.
I don't think they will. I think they want to go right back to Cameo Fest. They're still stuck in the, let's bring everything from Clone Wars and Rebels that we can. Who knows? Maybe once they've fixed and moved on to like the sequel trilogy era, maybe then we'll finally get some.
Yeah.
Truly new and original stuff.
What they don't do now, start trying to bring back people from Andor some way. Yeah. And
I already made a joke about.
Don't need that.
And, yeah, no more Saw Gerrera.
Andor Jr. The one of the best parts about this was no cameos, and it's not just because I hate cameos. I don't. They serve a purpose. There's a time and place for them. There used to be a time and place for them, and now they're just generally everywhere, and that's annoying. Saw Gerrera being the closest thing to a cameo, and I was right, Cam. The whole scene on where he's getting his Rylon, whatever, the gas he's huffing. Guys, don't huff anything. It's bad. That whole scene was pointless. The scene where yep. the teleconference, the freaking Zoom call, the holo Zoom, that was fine. That's absolutely necessary. Mm-hmm. But that whole
it leads
thing,
into Rogue One.
See,
yeah,
the huffing thing for me though was a bit that it was more about how he was speaking to Wilman.
Yeah, but then they never really do anything with that. Yeah. He's
kind of the point is, you know, he knows that he's not getting out of this, and also you might as well huff gas because you know you could be here today, gone tomorrow, in just a flash, and bugger it. You know, we'll never see the peace at the end of this. We're only going to experience the hard shift. So whatever you can do to get yourself through it, son.
If we had seen him cope with that more, maybe. But the fact is, he just looks a little bit more disheveled and has his mask around. Like that's the only results. I never really felt they did anything with that. They never made it.
Yeah,
so to me,
I disagree, and I really like that scene. But yeah. I accept you.
So other than that, there were no cameos, which I think again was great. Was brilliant move. It even made the cameos in Rogue One feel weird. It made a lot of parts of Rogue One feel a bit weird. But yeah, overall, I freaking loved it. I'll grade first, again, A+ for the whole thing. It is the epitome of live action Star Wars series writing. It is leaps and bounds above 90% of the writing in all three trilogies. There's about 10%. We'll say 15%. It's over by 85%. But there's 10-15% in the original trilogy, and little bits and pieces of the others that had some really good writing, some really good moments. Not much in the prequels. But this is just so good. And if you haven't seen it yet, even if you've listened to all the spoilers, it's you at least know who won't be making it to the after party on Yavin 4 after the Death Star's blown up. But go back, watch it, check it out. A+ for this part, and an A+ for the whole series. I really would give it an A because I think certain parts, like those first three episodes, kind of don't hold up very well. I get what they establish and stuff, but I do think they stand out as almost skippable. But everything else is so good, even in a case where I would usually dock it for having a whole part be almost unnecessary, the last three parts make up for it. So Shockey, what about you, man? Grade the part and season.
The part three, A+ overall. Great writing, great acting, great directing, great storytelling. It makes you watch Rogue One again and see it in a different light. And that's very hard to do, to make, you know, a movie better, you know, afterwards. Series wise, like you, the first three episodes, it could have done with, you know, you could do without it and pick up with episode four and be fine. Overall, great tone to this. It's everything that we've been asking for Star Wars, for like at least the adult fans, for a long time. Mm-hmm. Now, and we finally got it, and it's there's hope now that, you know, that we could possibly get another series like this. And do we need a big budget for it? No. I don't think so. I hope that there's someone at Lucasfilm that just sees this and says, okay, there is a fan base for this, and this is, you know, I understand the selling toys part and selling video games and you know, appealing to kids and stuff. I get that, you know. I get, you know, why they did Skeleton Crew and they do, you know, the cartoons and stuff and everything. But for the adults that have grown ups from the original trilogy, even from the prequels, this is what we want. And so yeah. I hope we get that here in the future.
Cam?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what else I can add. I'm kind of the same as you. A plus for this set of episodes. If I grade them all, first set I gave A, and then A plus, A plus, A plus. So overall series is an A plus. And I would even say I rank season two higher than season one.
Oh, yeah, easily.
Even though I think I gave season one an A plus as well.
This is A plus.
It's phenomenal.
And A plus plus, yeah.
Together, you know, and mixed in with Rogue One and A New Hope, they're just it's just phenomenal. Some of the best TV I've seen this year outside of Star Wars, just pick really good drama series, and this is up there with anything. It really is. It's some of the best TV, and it's one of those things that you're going to go back and talk about in 20 years and go, oh man, remember how good Andor was? I'm going to watch that again. It's been a few years since I've seen that. You know, that's the kind of thing that you're going to do. And if you're like us and you maybe don't love the prequels or the sequels too much, you know, you can sit down and watch Andor season one, season two, Rogue One, and then the original trilogy and be quite happy, you know. And that's nice that we can add occasional new steps in, even if we don't want the full thing.
I agree. Speaking of Rogue One, I watched it right after finishing. Like I said, there was some interruptions here and there, but we got through it that night. Still overall enjoyed the movie, but I definitely saw a lot more. And it had been a while since it had been... I think I watched it last year at some point, but it was like background watching it. Like we were cooking whatever, yep. But... I definitely saw some seams between the Gilroy and Edwards, right? Gareth Edwards.
Yeah.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple thousand dollars in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/darkparanormal or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal.
You can definitely see that. You can see where they're like, put these together and hope people don't notice too much, like some of the Saw Gerrera stuff with the creature. You can definitely tell there were the Lucas film... notes. Hey, why not instead of having Vader do a video call, a Zoom holo Zoom call with Krennic? Let's go to Mustafar, get a really good establishing shot of it. You know, make sure we put the ghost in the corner. That one's actually not that offensive. But let's have everybody rushing to get to their ships, and then have 3PO and R2-D2. And then somehow they make it to the ship that they're going to get on and get to Scarif as well to be part of the Tantive's run away. Just you could see some of the like I said, the seams. You could see some of the cracks in Rogue One. However, with all the context, and I love the writing. I love when you hear... Andor say something about there at the beginning of Rogue One. He sounds so freaking shocked. Oh, yeah, Erso. He's like, Erso, you mean Galen Erso? And how, yes, they wrote this after the fact, but the fact is that they were unlike Leia's fucking bullshit in Kenobi. This writing of connecting where he hears the name Erso from Clea and that whole mission. It matched up. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to do any mental gymnastics.
And how about the parallels between Luthien and Cassian when Luthien gets the information
and kills the guy,
kills him, and then Cassian does the same. Yep. Yeah, same
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, because it's like, whatever needs to happen.
Like Cassian became Luthien there. Yeah, you know, as much as he fought Luthien and his ways of doing things, and it came full circle. It's like, now I know what, you know, must be done and stuff. And so that I just, like, when I saw that again, it, like, wow, like, to connect those dots together was pretty amazing.
But not only that, it makes the scene on the ridge where he's about to shoot Galen and doesn't even bigger, because that's him reaching back to, mm-hmm. I'm better than that. Like, his values. I'll do whatever it takes. But this isn't necessarily anything, is not what it takes right now. I don't necessarily have to do this. There's wiggle room. So there are things that just feed right into it. There's, you know, the stuff on Jedha, and now you understand why it's moving so fast. I still hate how they've shrunk the galaxy down, and that isn't a little bit of a pet peeve I had with Andor. They got on and off Coruscant way too easy. Like, there are entire chapters in the Rogue Squadron books laid out on getting on and off planet, you know, on and off Coruscant when they're, like, inserting Rogue Squadron to help take it down. And so it was not easy. And they're just like... But anyways...
It's like flying into an airport.
Right? Yeah. Anyways,
Maybe the security did get better after that point, because they were still not treating the rebels as a serious threat that could actually attack them at this point.
But,
maybe you could excuse it that
but
way.
They always had a lot of traffic control. At least that's how it's described in the EU. It's very controlled. It's a port. So coming onto planet, when you've got any planet, there's meant to be sensors and stuff so they can tell who's coming off and on.
Right.
That's the point. Not even just like extreme Imperial security, just general port of entry security. That being said, it's a little one, just like how small the, you know, you can get from Yavin to Coruscant in like 2 hours. You know? They were hiding right under our noses. Rogue One is both made better, but also, in like I said, some ways it's made worse, because you just see the glaring issues with it and you're kind of like, okay, I get it. Those that were that did not like Rogue One, I can kind of see some of the things they're getting at, especially with Jen's character, and I already saw that back in 2016. But my goodness, does it not just enhance Andor's arc as well? And it's almost like playing Final Fantasy 12, where the main character that you play as really isn't the main character of the story, and you don't like the main character you're forced to play as or watch, Jen Erso. You're there for the supporting cast, which are the actual story, Andor and his crew. Mike, you watched Rogue One as well after this. What'd you think? How do you feel about it following that?
Same points as you made. I love how it makes Cassian a better character in the movie. There are some issues that we talked about, it like it was unnecessary to have Tarkin in Rogue One. That was, you know, the kind of what you said.
At least the way they have him.
Yeah, the way they have him. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I liked how they did it in Andor, where it was just kind of by mention and stuff. And that's all you really needed. And same thing with Vader. They added it on because they wanted to sell and get that. But here's the one thing about Rogue One that after watching it was the scene when Jen comes into Yavin and meeting with the council and, you know, saying there's the secret plans to the Death Star in, you know, on this base and stuff. And they're hesitant to say, all right, let's go get it. It was kind of like, wait a minute, everything they questioned all the information of what Luthien gave to them, and Cassian proves them right. It's got, you know, everything, it's all worked out, and they still don't want to, you know, go after the Death Star plans, how it's too much. And so they end up using the ragtag rebel group to go in, and then it starts like, all right, let's go on Scarif. That was where I kind of was like, I see now, like, you know, the movie was made before and stuff, but it probably would have been better if they'd been like, oh, she's the final key to the puzzle. She knows. It confirms everything we've been told. Let's go. Let's start with a small insurgent group, and then we'll come right behind with a big, you know, group and get the information. That was the only thing about Rogue One that was like, that doesn't work, because what we got from the with Cassian, you know, coming to the council, and Bail Organa kind of shooing him off and stuff, and then, you know, and then Jin comes and same exact thing and stuff, and they're still, nah, it's not, we're not going after it, you know.
I think they're still worried it's a trap, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
That's the problem.
A little bit.
Know, there's still no one got eyes on it yet at this point, so they're still worried that this is actually all a trap set up by something like ISB just to actually catch them and bring them out into the open when they're not quite ready for it.
I don't know. If I was the leader of the Rebel Council and you told me, like, basically three times, there's a big, massive weapon, there's a big, massive weapon, there's a big, massive weapon. On the third time, I'm going to be like, all right, let's go send a crew out.
Especially after they experience at least something weird. They don't know for certain it was the Death Star at Jedha, but they know that something freaking wicked happened.
Yeah.
It there's some cracks there. It's still a good movie. It still holds up fairly well. And while I think the Moosta,
the space battle at the end works really well on its own. But I think there's some cracks on the way up there, you know, to get to that point for sure.
I was gonna say, while the Mustafar scene I think should have been a holo zoom call. I think the hallway works because Vader should have been like, you know, Krennic, you failed again. I'll meet you on Scarif. Mm-hmm. And we're going to discuss your security protocol or something like that, right? And that brings him on the ship because he needs to be chasing the Tantive. That's the Tantive 5 or something like that. Whatever.
Four.
There you go. So he being there in the hallway scene, still so cool, is fine being there. It's that Mustafar one that was a bit too far. A lot of the same conversation could happen, but it didn't need to be in person, and it didn't need to be on.
Yeah,
on
it still Mustafar. Does a force choke through through the holozoom like he did in Empire and stuff. So
I kind of disagree with you guys about Tarkin, though. I think Tarkin does need to be there. I just think the problem is they should have just recast the role.
Yeah,
we see it. We accept it with Bail Organa and this.
Yeah,
do you know what? It's this Hollywood. We all accept that actors can't stay around forever. I just don't think there was any need to CGI Peter Cushing for that. They should have just got someone else to look a little bit like, you know. But I think Tarkin needs to physically be there to take over the Death Star. That's a whole part of Krennic's arc. You know, without that, who else is senior enough to come in and go, I'm taking command off you, Toddle? You know, there isn't really him and Vader, and Vader, he would just shit himself and run away. So, you know, it has to be someone that he kind of has ambitions of clawing towards at some point, but is above him.
I'll rewrite it, right? So most everything still happens. We have some interactions either where we see Tarkin on a holo zoom, or and it's a holonet call, guys, I know. Anyways, we maybe see that, hear it maybe, or there's conversations where messages are being passed on. Vader, you know, tells Krennic he's coming to Scarif, and that his, you know, his command of the program is up for discussion, something along those lines. The stuff goes down on Scarif the way it does. Krennic is still panicked, trying to hold on to his project as things are falling apart. And there at the end of the movie, right, you have Vader walk up to Tarkin from behind. And you just see Tarkin from behind. You never see the front. And Vader says, you know, this is now yours. It's your project.
Similar to how, like, Piet like gets promoted throughout the original trilogy, you know, and stuff. And
so it's very weird with him being all,
because Tarkin is theoretically more senior than Vader. I know that's arguable.
He's a governor.
You know, at the end of the day, if if Vader actually just cut Tarkin in half, I think the Emperor would probably kind of shrug it off.
Yeah.
You know, but if Tarkin killed Vader, the Emperor would not be happy.
Remember.
So I think there's that, but I think officially he's more suited.
From the EU perspective, and I can only really speak about it thoroughly through that lens, Vader isn't in anyone's command but the Emperor's. He's extra military. Yeah. He's extra government. Yeah. He is outside. He is neither above nor below.
He's not a rank.
He just is. And
his rank is Lord.
And he's also a messenger of the, you know, a voice of the Emperor in ways. Mm-hmm. And that's why him saying this is your project now.
An enforcer as well.
An enforcer. You know? So yeah, I think it's fine for...
It means, oh...
Yeah, bad. I think it's fine. And Grand Moff Tarkin, Moff being kind of like a governor, and again, EU-type thing, so he would have been a regional governor having multiple star systems. It was kind of weird for him to get the Death Star with the old EU lore or world-building as it was, but he did, whatever. It's just, it's a weird one. I agree that you kind of still need him in some aspects, but definitely didn't need as much or him walking around all like that.
Quick question. Yeah. Did you guys, so this is what I thought was weird, and I don't know if it, did you guys think it was weird for in the last episode, all the ISB troopers not having their helmets and not being just regular stormtroopers?
No, that made sense because they weren't stormtroopers to me.
They're not
stormtroopers. They're just putting the armor on. So they've just it was an armor they have, and they gave the commander the armor as well, but they weren't stormtroopers. Yeah. They never had helmet.
It is like to me it's like every other type of like trooper esque or you know, going in battle has their full armor, or like, you know, helmet
they
all the way down.
They wanted these ones to actually be able to hit their targets.
So, all right, guys, helmets off. We're going in live. We want to hit target. I thought for just my thinking of it, like the reason why they had it that way was because of this Screen Actors Guild new contract and stuff. That, you know, in order to get paid, you got to show your face and everything. So, or like and have screen credit. They did it that way and stuff. I didn't know. I just thought it was like because like. Every other Star Wars, like even in Rogue One, Krennic's got the Death Troopers and stuff, and they're all in full armor and everything. And then all of a sudden, his random assignment with in Episode 11 and 12, all the troopers there, the ISB troopers, are without helmets on and stuff. So you can see their face. And
ISB's not really military as well, is it?
Yeah, I guess.
It's a bit they're like more CIA. Civil.
Yeah, they're like CIA.
So it kind of, and it's on their home turf. It's on Coruscant as well. So I thought of these guys as more like being like the police or like the squad.
I didn't question it too much.
The grunts that you would have at the CIA that come out, you know, with the suits on and guns, you know, and stuff like that. I just thought it was that type of deal, you know, and they were like SWAT team or something. But yeah, fair enough.
We've discussed a bit throughout this about the future of Star Wars and whether or not we think we'll be getting some stuff like this. So I don't want to rehash that where we would all love more, mature stuff, more all ages stuff, more stuff that's not aimed at 10-year-olds. And it's fine if you enjoy it, it's fine, but it's still aimed at 10-year-olds. But let's talk about what is next and the fact that what we have, Star Wars Visions this fall. Is there another series between now and Mando and Grogu next summer?
No. Tales of the Underworld just came out.
Right.
I don't know if you guys watched that.
There's no live action shows. No live action shows green lit.
Ahsoka.
Talk about Whiplash, guys. Talk about Whiplash.
Other than Ahsoka season 2. I mean, that's hitting. Well, that's about to start.
And that's next year anyways.
But that's next year. But
think about that. Like, does anyone here honestly believe the Mandalorian and Grogu will be more like season 1 or 2 than it was 3? Because I don't. It might be somewhere between 2 and 3.
It'll be between.
But it's not going to be 1 or 2. And the type of Whiplash and the fact that that's the next project and the next movie... After this, like, do you guys think that will make it harder to enjoy even Mandalorian stuff? Like, what are your thoughts on it, Cam?
I mean,
the aftershocks.
I don't know. It depends. If it's good, it's good, you know, and if it's not good, it's not good. I think it really comes that simple. It doesn't have to be A plus. This is the best thing since Empire. It doesn't have to be that to be. That was good. I enjoyed that. I'm glad I spent the money watching that. I'd probably watch that again. That's kind of all it needs to be in terms of the level. And for some, you know, fans out there, they don't like Andor that much. You know, there is a lot of people out there that it's not really for
it's
them
because
they are
more into
the kiddish. It's boring. They spend too much time talking. There's not enough action. There's no Jedi. And all the things we love about it, they don't like, right? So, you know, from a movie point of view, you're not going to go that route. So I'm just hoping that it's decent. You know, that's as much as I'll go with. Whether I think it will be or not, I have no idea.
You don't think?
I have no idea.
You don't think this, because we've been low already, and now we're up super high, you don't think that's going to mess with expectations or anything? You think you'll still be able to go into Mando, Grogu, open-minded, so to speak?
Yeah, because I always go into everything open-minded and hope it's...
Maybe that's not the right phrase.
It's going to be good. It's just too... It's too often that it's just not, you know.
Right.
But I'll always
and that's
a try, and I go in hopeful.
Yeah, and like I said, maybe open-minded is the wrong word, but you don't feel like this will have an effect to where it kind of lessens the chances of it, of Mando and Grogu. I'm trying to figure out how to word this,
like walking. You know,
yeah, like where I'm just kind of like
that, or you think
no,
people
I can't do
like,
it anymore. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe, but, you know, it depends on the fans, you know, yeah. And there's going to be casual audiences that just don't watch Andor, right? They see it's a Star Wars series. They watch the first episode
and they're like,
this is boring, and switch it off. My sister did that. My sister's not watched Andor, and she's a huge Star Wars fan, has been a Star Wars fan as long as me, because we've watched it at the same time. And she's not, and I'm like, I don't get it. She's like, I watched the first episode, the first season, and I thought it was a bit boring. I'm like, well, do you read the first? And I did say, would you read the first chapter of a book? Go, I didn't like this that much, so that's not for me.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, I've done that before. I'm like, well, I don't know, I can't do that. You've got to give it a chance, give it a little bit more, you know. So I was trying to say that to her, but, you know, there are going to be people out there that just wouldn't watch something like that. And the fact that it is more cerebral will put them off. You know, people out there, there is an audience out there that just wants to watch Jack Reacher on Amazon, you know, watch, what's his name, run about and just put people through windows and, you know, punch people in the face. And that's TV to them. They want to watch The Equalizer season 29 or whatever, where, you know, it's just the same thing as happened every other season. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what they want to watch. It's switch your brain off TV, and Andor is not that.
No.
So you're in an audience that, you know, Breaking Bad, The Penguin, you know, look at some of the really quality TV shows.
Battlestar Galactica.
And have been over the years, and that's where Andor is. It's not going to be for everyone.
What about you, Shaki? What do you think kind of like the after effects of Andor for both you personally and Star Wars fandom.
I honestly don't think we're going to get anything similar to Andor for a minimum of 10 years if you think about it. You know, all the projects that have been announced that are in the works, there's really like the only thing I could think that could come close to this is if it's still in production or still a shot is Rogue Squadron. That's really it. I mean, because all the other ones, I mean, the origin of the Jedi movie, I don't see that. You know, the other trilogy, you know, the Rey trilogy, I don't see that. The, you know, live action.
We're getting Ragnar Starfighter and his nephew going across the galaxy.
Yeah, Starfighter, so you think all the projects that are announced that are right now, that's within the next 5 years. And so their next, you know, group of movies won't be announced for another 3 or 4 years. So yeah, I mean, you're talking about either live action type deal in Disney Plus or theater. No, I don't see it happening. It was great, but I can see it from the business side of it. It probably didn't make the money back, you know, for Disney. So Disney's not going to want to, you know, invest into another series like this unless, you know, there was a boom of subscribers that came following after and stuff. Or, you know, it's a shame because I think that this would have been a great trilogy, you know, of set of movies if they came out, you know, almost like filmed it like Lord of the Rings and every year come out with, you know, one in part one, part two, part three of Andor, you know. I think it would have done really well. Do I think it would have broken box office records? No, but, you know, for what
they made was a profit though because of the critical.
Oh, it would have definitely been up for some awards and stuff for the writing. Yeah. It should be up for awards for.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I wonder if there'll be some Emmys for this.
Should be up for some Emmys.
Yeah, it should. Yeah. It writing, should, without a doubt.
Like, please, writing.
I mean, we're now in what are we in May? That's the best TV show I've seen this year, and I've reviewed six or seven TV shows since the turn of the year. Some of the big ones. This is the best.
Put Mothma and Clea up for supporting actress. Put Luthen. And put Luthen up for supporting actor.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Put it up for writing. Put it up for production. Put it up for editing. Like, put it up for
multiple, for everything. Multiple nominations. Yeah. So now I'm gonna go into the rest of these Star Wars projects, kind of the tier of like, you know, watching Clone Wars or watching Rebels. Like watching Batman the animated series and stuff, and be like, hey, it's targeted for kids and everything. But I'll enjoy bits and pieces of it. But am I going to enjoy it to the level like what this was, where it kind of brought me back to what I love about Star Wars? Probably not. You know.
Yeah.
But it's us getting older, us, you know, wanting.
Yeah, missed that as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Different things. Different times, things. So. Different.
Yep.
Different eras and. Yet I'll remind people that the ones that carried on everything, the parents that you know gave birth and raised people that were eventually prequel fans and those that raised it all stems from the original trilogy, which for the overwhelming majority of it was an all ages affair and didn't need to be aimed at 10-year-olds. Like, we were into it before the Ewoks ever showed up. So that's gonna be it, guys, for us for now. Look forward to Star Wars Visions reactions on AVR Squared here on the Genreverse, and of course the Animeversal Patreon. Not only that, but I will be dragging Shockey and Cam along, not necessarily for reactions because we already got a full crew for that, but for reviews, especially the sequel or prequel, the second episodes to stuff that we saw in Star Wars Visions Volume 1. So, yeah, and sometime next year, if we're still doing this, which we hope to be, one of these guys is going to go see Grogu and Mandalorian and Grogu and let me know whether or not I should bother. Probably not, but... stay tuned and hopefully we will be bringing you guys more Star Wars news in the future with classic Cantina episodes where we just discuss Star Wars stuff. So and you can get all of that and more over at lrmonline.com. Thumbnails being slow to load in. That's all right. I'm curious about the Highlander reboot, and if you guys are too, check out Clark's Cam's article right there. Shockey, anything else to say?
No, you covered it all. Just let us know in the comment sections what your thoughts were about Andor, and would you want to see more Star Wars content similar to what we got with Andor, or are you wanting to go back to Mando season 3 and all that boring stuff?
Cam?
Nothing more to say, really. Just would love to see more content like this. Don't think we will very often, but would love to. You know, proper writers getting allowed to tell proper stories. You know, if they had this kind of level of writing when they thought about making a sequel trilogy, you know, who knows where we would have been. You know, someone at Tony Gilroy's level instead of what we did get, which, you know,
JJ
may or may yet have destroyed the franchise. We'll see.
It's definitely in rough shape. Anyways, guys, thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.